Take a network break, steep a hot cup of tea, visualize the perfect virtual donut, and join us as we dive into the latest tech news. I'm your host, Drew Connery Murray, and joining me is Greg Farrow. Before we jump into the news, I want to thank today's sponsor. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials for a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account. Go to itpro.tv/networkbreak. Use the code NETWORKBREAK30. Thanks, IT Pro TV. Okay, jumping right into the news. Cisco and Arista, there's been an ongoing patent battle. The U.S. International Trade Commission has ruled that Arista has, in fact, infringed on three Cisco patents. This confirms an initial finding that was made back in February 2016. So a cease and desist order that's going to prevent Arista from selling infringing products in the U.S. is supposed to go into effect August 23rd. What's happening?
Well, step two out of four. So this isn't a win for Cisco. It's a win in the current phase of the lawsuit. Remember when we said it, it's Cisco decided not only to launch a copyright battle in the copyright courts in the US, but also took it to the US International Trade Commission to get instant relief, which is you can go to the Trade Commission and say these products breach the copyright, therefore they shouldn't be imported into the company while we wait for the copyright case to be decided. Okay, and the ITC, the International Trade Commission, which is seen as having a lower bar for validation, has agreed that Arista has breaches two patents, one related to SysDB, and they say that they have now changed the way EOS agents work so that it doesn't breach that patent, and one related to private VLANs, and Arista has will drop private VLAN support, so that feature will just be taken out of the code, and that will now become a Cisco specific feature until the copyright expires on that particular item in a few years' time. So Cisco has written a fairly hostile blog post. Again, there's a link in the show notes, crowing that Arista is bad and that the world is ending and that they just want fair competition, blah, blah, blah. Although it still, again, it still rings hollow, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly rings very threatening. They're definitely trying to kick up some FUD, some fear, uncertainty, and doubt for potential and current Arista customers by saying, you know, who knows what's going to happen to this company, and if you're thinking about buying them, maybe you should wait because, wow, this could be very terrible and scary.
The people that I've spoken to, whenever you say to, you know, I talk to customers and resellers and things like that on a fairly regular basis, and everybody basically says it. The simple point is that Arista's taking market share, and Cisco obviously feels it can't compete in the traditional manner, that is by producing better products or, you know, better pricing or better features or better services or better sales. So this is what they're turning to try and defeat Arista. I noticed that the share price after this announcement was only down 3.6%. So to some extent, either the pricing of the risk of this to Arista's business is priced in, or people don't believe that it's actually going to have a substantial impact going forward. It's just another step in a very long, decade-long legal fight, and I don't think it means too much at the end of the day. If you're using Arista private VLANs, you're going to be a little bit annoyed when the next version of code has the features removed. But you're probably not going to blame Arista. You're probably going to blame Cisco when it happens.
That's right. And according to an Arista press release, the company says it's already developed design arounds. It is going to drop that private VLAN support, at least for now. They will try to get these changes approved in the regulatory framework. So still no final resolution to this. It's ongoing, but quite a little operatic drama.
Yeah, Cisco's sort of – I mean, the blog post from Cisco is trying to say that Arista products won't be sold after this date, and that's not true. They've only managed to hit Arista on just a very narrow set of problems. They do have to get the design arounds approved by the court, and it's not entirely clear whether Cisco has an advantage there or not. Like, is the court actually going to do that? We don't know.
So, right, that's another shoe that still has to drop.
Yeah, there's still a lot here. Cisco's definitely pushing aggressively to try and get as much mileage out there in the community, and I'm not sure that Cisco's position is as strong as they would like you to believe. You know, it's just this is one round. There are several more rounds to go before I think it impacts Cisco, Arista's customers.
Right, and I believe there's also another patent infringement case before the U.S. International Trade Commission, so that still is moving through the process as well.
Yeah, I seem to remember there was four of them in the Trade Commission in four copyright cases, and this is one, which is one of the patents in the 944. So the others are yet to come, and they may or may not have a greater or lesser effect. As I said, the share price hasn't varied. If the market is a measure of, you know, what's the impact to people, to customers and to sales, and ultimately sales. It hasn't varied by a lot. It's down a bit because people were being a bit more optimistic, but you know.
Right, a 3-4% drop, you know, not awesome, but also not calamity, end of the world. This is, you know, the company is doomed.
No. Arista's still selling an awful lot of switches. We talked last week about their Universal Leaf, how they're building 1RU switches based on the uprated Broadcom chips to get more TCAMs and more density, more performance, you know, that sort of thing, and reach into a bigger market in the data center because not everybody needs a chassis. So I don't see this as a problem. Theoretically, Arista should just be able to dance around the copyright laws. They may have take some impact when they lose some features, but that's probably okay.
Mm-hmm. All right. So definitely something we'll keep an eye on, but so far, not the end of Arista.
It doesn't seem like it, no. Not on the evidence we see so far.
All right. So while we've got established vendors battling over patents and copyrights, we've got more startup activity. I found a company called SnapRoute. They are playing in the open networking space. They're developing a fully open source, they say fully open source, not just quote-unquote open, L2, L3 networking stack called FlexSwitch. It's a modular code, so you can pick and choose the switch and routing protocols you want instead of having to buy this sort of closed bundled system that's all bloated up. They're actually already partnering with Facebook on the Open Compute Project, so if you're interested in those Facebook wedge switches, you can get FlexSwitch right now.
Now that we've got disaggregation is well underway and people can participate on these platforms, so this is just the L2, L3 protocol stack at the moment. So if you need an MLAG, if you need a BGP, if you need an OSPF, and that sort of thing. So it's just that protocol stack that they've built. It's been written in Go from scratch, and it will be one day eventually open source. They seem to have announced very early. But one of the interesting things is that the people who are writing this code are actually people who've been working for companies like Apple and other very large providers. And there's a blog post on SnapRoute which says, and I'll just read this to you because this rings very true to me. As SnapRoute's founder, I'm not ashamed to admit a dirty little secret, which won't come as a surprise to many network operations executives. My rise up the ladder had less to do with my own technical accomplishments and more to do with my ability to get vendors to tend to my needs pronto. I built a rep as a hired gun that can get things done when really my greater skill was knowing who to call and what to say to get support from Cisco or another vendor. It was a great gig while it lasted. I didn't even have to write my business case. Sure, vendors had their faults, but at the end of the day, they had my back. Now, the blog post goes on to say that this fell down because when he scaled up to the biggest networks in the world, these vendor products just had no telemetry. He had no visibility. He had ran into problems in those networks and he had no way to debug them. And the vendors didn't know how to fix them either. And this is what's led him to found SnapRoute and write protocols so that you can debug, you can get transparency, you can know what's going wrong. So again, this validation of this story is that the vendors haven't been able to solve get their houses in order to produce reliable products and have the features that customers really want. And all of a sudden, customers are saying, you know what? We can just make them ourselves. Move on. And that's a disruption, I think.
Yeah, this founder's coming out of, he was running data center networking at Apple, so probably knows his chops.
That's right. He says, at Apple, we ran into a number of vendors that were masquerading as open source companies. But while they may have used and contributed open source code, the products themselves were proprietary and closed. It's like, wow, that burns.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, sort of founder, why I did this story. There's a lot of passion in there that you don't often get from a company, which is kind of neat.
Yes, and so their first placement of this FlexSwitch is in the OpenSwitch network operating system, which was created by HP last year, recently pushed into the OpenSwitch Foundation under the auspices of the Linux Foundations. And that's that's going to be great. And they're also saying that they're going to plan to contribute to Open Compute Program. I think, while you aren't using Whitebox today, this is another one of these sort of steps in saying that there's enough momentum behind Whitebox to start to change you. But interestingly, after all that he said, his last paragraph is, we plan to proceed with humility and an operational-minded pragmatism to build an ecosystem to help companies who want to use infrastructure, internet infrastructure, as a competitive advantage. But he's right. We've all experienced problems where the vendor says, our thing does this. We buy it. It doesn't do that. And the vendor says, we'll raise a case. And you spend 6 months trying to get it to work and you've got no telemetry or you've got intermittent problems and there's no way to get data. Just very frustrating.
So they've got an open beta. There's a sign up on their website. We'll have a link if you want to go and check it out. But just so amazing to see the interest and innovation going on in open networking.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like this whole idea of 2 years ago, if you had said to me that there'd be like yet another BGP stack written. So now we have, I think last time I checked, there's 7 or 8. You know, there's Bird, there's Quagga, there's... And 2 or 3 years ago, people would have told you that they're not scalable, they're not fit for purpose, they're not reliable enough for real everyday use. And yet, all of a sudden, we hear internet exchange points have been running Bird or Quagga for 5 years as route reflectors, and they don't even run BGP on routers anymore. They just, you run them on Linux. You know, like, there's all these things suddenly coming out of the woodwork that sort of go, like, oh, okay. And, you know, there's a guy in Japan who wrote a BGP stack in Go in 6 months. From nothing, right? It still needs testing and validation, and maybe it doesn't have all the you know, the wanker knobs that the vendor implementations have. But you know what? Most people just don't need them. And it's only a matter of time before that gets added in. As if you need this extra BGP feature, you know, the latest BGP RFC to come out of the IOTF or something like that, guess what? You can just go and get the code and write it in and then contribute it back, and boom, everybody's got it. It's only a matter of time, right. I think. Now, you know, you'll always have the open source versus proprietary in the early days, and it's going to take years, but this is just another one of these, like, momentum continues to build behind them.
And speaking of startups and innovation, you found somebody called Apstra. They're coming out of stealth.
Yeah, Apstra is really, really exciting. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of information. I wasn't able to get access. They've sort of had like a pre-launch here. It's not a full launch, but Apstra is an operating system which platforms over the top. So the idea is that you have a bunch of physical switches underneath, multi-vendor, who cares, whatever they are, and then you put an SDN controller over the top, and that acts as an operating system for the data center. This is very close to the original vision that ACI was promoting 4 or 5 years, like way back in the early days, that it would be the data center operating system for your network. And Apstra is going to do it. But not only is it doing it for Cisco, it's doing it for multi-vendor, which is hugely exciting. It uses an agent-based architecture. So instead of screen scraping the existing switches or trying to pull levers on ISIS or BGP like the other vendors are doing, you know, with proprietary extensions to those protocols, or in the case of Contrail, they use MPLS tags, blah, blah, blah. Apstra says, let's put an agent in the switch, and that gives us the ability to do much more stuff. So they've been working with the vendors to get agents inside of their hardware. They can use VMs, so a lot of vendor equipment is now being able to deploy VMs or Docker containers, and that's how they get the feature set. So I will talk more about this once I get more information, but my initial reaction to this was that this is the SDN we wanted to have 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when we first started talking about OpenFlow and SDN.
Wow, that's pretty high praise.
Yeah, this, yeah. This is the
SDN
architecture
we've been looking for.
It is the SDN I was expecting. I don't want to have custom hardware in a switch. I want to have the choice of custom hardware in a switch. I want to be able to say, I'm going to talk to this switch, but if this switch has got advanced features, then there's an agent in there that lets me access those features, then that's what I have. If I've got a data center with Cisco switches and Juniper switches and Brocade switches, you know, or multiple data centers, then this operating system means I don't actually know about the differences. Sure, I've got to do an integration thing to make sure the features that I need are there, but at the end of the day, it shouldn't matter what brand of car I drive when I get from point A to point B. One car might be better than the other. It might be more comfortable. It might be faster. It might be cheap and smelly. But at the end of the day, I still get from point A to point B, right? So that's the way SDN should evolve, I believe.
So I know you haven't had a chance to really dig into this, but how is it different from what the initial, when SDN first came around, it was all about OpenFlow is going to be our way to communicate with switches and have a controller on top. But you're saying
it was always about the controller,
doing agents
not...
instead of SDN instead
of
OpenFlow?
Yeah, the idea was with OpenFlow is that you'd have a very primitive and fine-grained control over the device. So you could program the flows very granularly. And that means that your software has to be able to calculate very fine-grained granularly control. And what we've probably learned is that the software is not able to do that, or that the people who are programming the software can't encompass that imagination to do that, right? They can't build rules that actually program. Some of the companies have, but they haven't been able to get, you know, traction in the market. I think the thing here is that I have an operating system which sits across the entire life cycle of the network infrastructure, right? So you have a design, you build it, and then you deploy it. And the agent is just a different way of programming inside the device, and it allows you to take advantage of the challenge with OpenFlow has always been, how do we get from where we are, you know, L3 entries in a TCAM table, to flow-based entries with massive flexibility? And we aren't, right? We haven't. 5 years in, we just haven't been able to. So it's 2011 to 2016. We haven't seen a lot of change. But we're just in the last 6 months, we've seen this P4 and the flexible silicon come out from Barefoot Networks with the Tolfino. We've seen this reversion to this SDN model of the controller actually works. We've seen white box continue the disaggregation. We're seeing more and more software come out around telemetry, like the GRC from Google, and the emphasis on monitoring systems. You know, the even Cisco's Tetration is a sign of the times as to how important it is to get visibility into the network. And I think Apstra is taking a very strong step in the direction that I imagine that people should consider. I don't say that the other solutions are wrong. Don't get me confused. I do feel that NSX and ACI might have lost their way over time in that, you know, they came out with a vision where they would be this controller and to be able to manage, and now the process of selling it and the process of pitching it and being inside a company and producing profits and revenue has sort of taken them down a path where they've lost sight of where they wanted to be. And that's perfectly normal. And maybe something like AOS can reset them. Maybe they need to buy AOS to reset their strategy. Mm-hmm. If it can prove out, of course.
Right. Okay. Yes. Very good. All right, let's move on. Some more innovation. Cumulus Networks, they're playing around with their software. Something new from Cumulus.
Cumulus has just released version 3 of their software. But what they're announcing now is a piece of software that allows layer 3 routing on the host. Why would you want to do that? And the answer is really, really simple. Is because a lot of customers have been saying to Cumulus, why don't you do multi-chassis lag? So the tradition is, of course, is that you have a server, you put two Ethernet ports on it, and then you connect them to two different switches, and then you tell the switches to treat that like a link aggregation group. But multi-chassis link aggregation is actually a very complex thing. And when you say complex, that means expensive, buggy, and very, very difficult to troubleshoot. You can't see when the multi-chassis lag fails, you can't see why it fails. And you're very dependent on the server on the other side, the operating system on the other side, to do the link aggregation itself. And the code that does link aggregation on the servers is often, well, rubbish, right? And it doesn't work. And again, no visibility. How do you know where the packets are going? How do you know? So what Cumulus has done is said, look, we know layer 3 works. We're going to release an agent. It's a Quagga package. You drop it straight into your Linux. And instead of using two layer 2 links bonded together, connect to a single VLAN, why don't you just route it? People have been doing this. There's several projects, several vendors out there. I was talking to somebody the other day in a completely unrelated company, and they have a data center that literally runs 30,000 servers, and every server has an IP address. Mm-hmm. Right there, right? So layer 3 routing to the server isn't new. What Cumulus is doing here is making it so much simpler to do. And that's great, I think.
Okay, well done, Cumulus.
Yes, exactly. And I'll be interested to sort of dig into this a little bit more. And they've got some quotes from big people who think this is a good idea as well. I think it looks just like a package. You just download it and away you go. It's not like you have to go and license it or something.
Okay, well, we'll have a link in the show notes if you want to go check it out. Mm-hmm. Some more news for you, but first we have to take a sponsor break. This episode of Network Break is being brought to you by IT Pro TV. With IT Pro TV, you gain access to the most important tools that you need to prepare for your IT certification. And Greg, you can tell us a little bit more about it.
Exactly. So IT Pro TV is a critical tool for getting ready for IT certification. But as I've always said, IT certification is only after the fact. What you need is to be a wider skill set. And I think that you can go to IT Pro TV and start watching their thousands of hours of up-to-date, high-quality video content. What you do is you just go in there, select a topic. Now, even if you're not studying for CompTIA, Advanced Security Practitioner, or your CCMP Security, or your MCSEs, you can still go in and watch those videos and learn some topics. Now, you may not want to deep dive into them so that you're ready to go and sit the exams, but you can sit there and one low monthly subscription price, a no-hassle cancellation policy. Perhaps you can even go and convince the boss to sign you up for some corporate group pricing. You should absolutely just get into this. I have a number of subscriptions to service like IT Pro TV, and when I want to learn something, I can hit them up and go in there and start watching videos or reading books or, you know, whatever it is. And this is one way to just keep expanding your knowledge base as time goes by. So, and if you are into certification, you can go and get into their virtual labs. They have access to the virtual labs, and they have access to Transcender practice exams in case you do actually want to go through the certification process.
That's right. And they've got both live stream and recorded video, so you can get it on demand when you need it. Check out itpro.tv/networkbreak to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but there's a special offer for Packet Pushers listeners. You can try it for free for 7 days when you sign up using a code NETWORKBREAK30, and you can see the courses, the live streams, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 a month or $399 for the entire year. So go check it out, and thank you, IT Pro TV. Mm-hmm. Back to the news. We just talked about Cumulus. Now we're talking about Pika 8. They make also a network operating system playing in the white box space. They have a new announcement. They are supporting the 2550 100 gigabit Ethernet networking.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about over the last year, Dell had their Tomahawk switch, Arista's come out with their Jericho switch. They're all about this 25, 40, 50, 100 gigabit. So Pika 8 releases the latest version of their operating system to run on white box Tomahawk, so they now have their products available. So if you're looking for a place to start with white box, Pika 8 is definitely a good one. The unique thing, I think, about Pika 8 is not only does it run on generic white box, it also runs on Dell. So if you particularly want to run it on a particular thing, you can do that. And also, sort of a feature that doesn't leap out at you is that they also are ready for Cavium XPliant ASICs. So I've talked a fair bit about the Cavium XPliant silicon and how it's got much better performance, much better capabilities than the Broadcom silicon that we're using today. So one of them is, for example, when you're running on XPliant, you've actually got 2 million layer 3 entries. So the TCAM functionality in the Cavium is vastly better than the ASICs that Broadcom is giving you, which is brilliant. They haven't certified the software to run on any of the Cavium white box switches yet, but I think it's coming. And there's no doubt in my mind that somebody from the vendors will produce a white brand or a bright box that'll have Cavium ASICs that you can buy. So HP will have one, I imagine, or Dell will have an open networking Cavium one out there soon. And PKOS might be the right operating system for you.
All right. Yeah, we'll have also links to that if you want more details. But again, love to see this innovation going on in the network space.
John Herbert over at movingpackets.net, friend of the show, he has written a really good blog post that broke it down. So get over there and read that, and I'll get some inside details.
Okay. Last week on the show, we were talking about sort of a weak appetite on Wall Street for tech IPOs, and we're seeing more companies go private equity or just outright acquisition. This week, however, a little startup called Twilio, which makes APIs for voice, video, messaging, and authentication, they went public and it blew up. They started at $15 a share. The share price closed up 92% at the end of the first day, so that they finished off at $28.79. Twilio is one of these unicorns that is a startup valued at $1 billion or more. By the end of the day when it closed, its valuation was $2.4 billion.
I mean, that's hopeful. The fact that consumer apps are getting away is suggesting that there's still an exit for enterprise IT startups. So if you're building a company in around enterprise IT, there's an exit for those, and that infects the financing, the venture capitalism going into the market. I'm not sure that Twilio, I mean, I haven't looked at Twilio in years, and it doesn't interest me much. It gets a bit creepy though, doesn't it? I don't know, you know, do I really want to be tracked and monitored to all of this sort of stuff? But, you know, they've taken the thing that they built many, many years ago as a messaging platform and turned it into voice and video and into call center type functionality. So you can use it as a back end for voice calls. You know, they definitely want to get away, because even Slack put a voice engine into its messaging platform. Is there money in voice? Obviously there is.
As you mentioned, what I thought was interesting is that this isn't a consumer-facing app. It's not a new social media platform. It's actually a tech company that's targeting software developers. It's not targeting the end consumer. So to see that kind of an organization get an exit, this good, you know, there must be venture capitalists all across Silicon Valley going, whew, okay, all right, we're okay.
Yeah, but I mean, Twilio is a phone call and text vendor, right? Basically, they have a messaging platform that does phone calls and text features in the back with an API. And that's not exactly unique anymore. And increasingly, tools like Snapchat and Facebook Messenger and, you know, LinkedIn is probably going to come out with a messaging platform. You know, they're going to just not quite sure why you would want to have yet another messaging platform.
Well, there's that, but
there's an awful lot of messaging and phone calls going on that we don't know about, though.
Absolutely, yes. if my 14-year-old is any indication of where things are going.
Yeah, that's right. So can I have a bit of a rant at something?
Please do. Rant away.
There was a thing on Twitter this week. Apparently, Nutanix was running a conference. It's next conference somewhere. And there's a picture of four women in bikinis on a Ferris wheel, literally rotating around. If you can imagine a 3-foot-high Ferris wheel with models in bikinis. I'm really opposed to this. I don't want to attend industry events that look like porn companies have attending them. And this is the sort of what we're saying here is that, you know, we need to use porn to sell our products. And I'm pretty offended by that personally. I find it offensive to see bikinis on a show floor. And it's offensive to not just me, but to everybody around me, especially to women. We just don't need this stuff.
Yeah, I was watching the Twitter storm from Tech Field Day, and I just shook my head thinking, really? Really? You haven't learned anything? Really? Don't you have women who work for you that... Don't you as a...
Yeah. The thing is that this isn't like they're continuing to do this. This isn't the first time. This is they have a long-standing history of doing this. And every time they do it, they get excoriated and it doesn't seem to do anything else. So I'm going to send you to a link from an article in 2014 for Nutanix just because they don't seem to be listening. And I'm sure they're definitely listening to the show. But there's a very famous person who wrote an article, Booth Babes Don't Convert. Literally what happens is when you put extremely good-looking women or, you know, barely clad women onto your stand, it chases people away. Don't do it.
Right. And frankly, at this point, when something like this happens, it feels like we're giving you the finger pretty much.
Yeah.
The company says, yeah, you know what? F you.
I can't imagine what the internal culture is at Nutanix if it looks like this.
Yes, if that's their public face.
If that's their public face and that's the way they want to represent themselves to the industry, basically looking like a porn company, that's not a good look.
Not at all. All right. Shame on you, Nutanix. Clean up your act.
Definitely.
All right, we can get down from our ranty horses now. This brings us to the end of the show. If folks want to hear more of your ranting, Greg, where can they get it?
On my blog at Ethereal Mind, on the Twitter is at Ethereal Mind, and at other fine institutions.
And you can find my blog on packetpushers.net. If you're interested in following me on Twitter, I'm at Drew_CM. Thank you to our sponsor, IT Pro TV, and thank you to you for joining us for another episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook, leave a recommendation on iTunes, or share it with your friends. And please check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. You can find out how to get those at packetpushers.net. Thank you for listening.